Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Ukrainian officials say at least 24 people are dead after a Russian rocket destroyed an apartment building on Saturday. This in the eastern Ukrainian city of Chasiv Yar. Crews are now trying to rescue people trapped under the rubble. Ukrainian President Zelensky condemned the attack, and he said Ukrainian forces are repelling assaults in various directions. Steve Hendricks has reported from eastern Ukraine for The Washington Post, our editorial partners, and he joins us. Steve, you spend time in cities that Russia now claims to have captured. What does urban fighting and urban retreat look like?
It's pretty messy and pretty scary to be in those places at this point. There are still remarkably civilians living in Lysychansk. The shelling is pretty constant. It's a big urban area, and you can actually see the neighboring sister city of Severodonetsk on another ridge. And both places are just being pounded. There's artillery strikes, plumes of smoke everywhere. Life always goes on in these places, difficult as that can be to imagine. But in the middle of all that, someone will ride down the street on a bicycle with some bread in their basket or some bags of bottles of water, you know, and they are in apartments. Many of the older people are in shelters, which are typically in the basements of schools, and they come out when they can, and they hide when they need to.
You've reported that people without internet can still write letters ferried by wartime couriers. How does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most remarkable things to me about this conflict is how it seems like such a throwback. The setting in that part of Ukraine is just this gorgeous countryside. It's very rural outside of Lysychansk. It's like every war movie we ever saw growing up. The tanks roll across farmland and you know, local people are milking their cows. And one of the ways that people in shelters are communicating without the benefit of phone lines or internet is writing by hand and giving it to volunteers who come in almost every day with food and supplies. And the volunteers take them out until they get a signal themselves 25 or 30 kilometers away, take a picture of the written letter and then send it by telegram or WhatsApp or signal to their family members. Then they wait for a response and they'll take that back in the form of a photograph on their phone the next time they visit that shelter.
Oh, wow. And who are these couriers? Are they just volunteers? They deliver letters, food, water, medicine?
Yes, all of that. There are civilian volunteers, mostly from Ukraine, but also from outside, from around Europe and other countries. In a place like Lysychansk, they're kind of the hardest core of the volunteers because they are actually going into an open combat zone. They'll be in body armor. They will drive tactically and be very fast on their runs. But they are bringing vital supplies. This is the last connection to food and water for many of these communities. So the need is great, but it's quite a dangerous job, and I really respect the people who are continuing to do it.
Steve, you also reported that you and your team from the Washington Post came upon a group of Ukrainian soldiers retreating just after they were hit by what was presumed to be a Russian cluster bomb. What happened, and how did your group and a medic you were with come to get involved in this?
Well, this was just outside of Lysychansk, in that rural setting that I just described, and we were on a dirt road looking for some Ukrainian artillery positions that we knew were there because we could hear them. And we came across a group of men, most of whom were sprawled in the grass, some of whom were upright and tending to them. And, you know, we stopped to see what was going on. They told us we needed to get out of there immediately because they had just come under fire. There was a lot of shelling very nearby. They could tell that we were press. And they didn't want us to endanger ourselves. But we told them that our driver, who is a military veteran from another country that I probably shouldn't identify, had combat medic training and was equipped with quite a substantial trauma kit. And then they asked us to come help. They had been separated from their own unit and from their own medical supplies, and our colleague was able to provide first aid for about 8 injured people, 2 of whom were seriously injured, one of whom had a head wound and was mostly unconscious, and he was in a bad way. His blood pressure was dropping, and it was quite wonderful to see this person with experience and the supplies be able to offer aid. He made it very clear, as we did, that we would have done the same thing for any injured people we came across. You know, we were not acting on the behalf of the Ukrainian military, but we were human beings who were helping injured people, and they appreciated it. And we were able to see them on their way, and then we ourselves got out of there as quickly as possible after that.
Right. I mean, this had to happen in a great hurry. The presumed cluster bomb hit, so you had to assume that the Russian troops could likely see what was going on.
Yes. Well, so the sequence of events was they had been coming through a nearby village, and they were in the center of the village when they were hit by what they think was a cluster bomb. We can't confirm that, but it was a shrapnel device that really devastated the men who were basically hanging on the outside of their armored vehicle, as is pretty typical in these retreats. And so they got out of there as quickly as possible. They pulled their comrades up onto the vehicles and raced out of the village a little bit less than a kilometer across a wheat and barley field to this spot where we found them. And they had already concealed their vehicles under brush as much as possible. They knew they were very vulnerable.
Now, the first responders in these situations, and you've written separate articles about that, include many women. One of them told you that her parents didn't even know she was on the front line. She was lying about what she was doing.
That's right. She's normally a nurse in the city of Dnipro, and she told them that she had a good job opportunity in the capital of Kyiv. So she told them she was actually farther away from the fighting than she normally would have been, when in fact she was. We met her in the town of Bakhmut, which is an extremely vulnerable frontline village right now.
Wow.
And, she couldn't even find body armor that fit her. She was a very, very small person. But she was every day making multiple trips to the front lines to help.
Yeah. And you also write about a Catholic priest who's on the front lines, wears combat fatigues under his robe. Can you tell me briefly about this priest who goes on the front lines? And you write that he carries the communion elements to the soldiers on the front line?
Yeah, his Sunday routine has come to, he starts at his church about 11 miles from the nearest Russian positions, under shelling, not constantly, but this is a town that's probably hit 3 or 4 times a day, where a building may be destroyed and someone injured. And there aren't many people left, but half a dozen people came to the mass last Sunday when we were there. They worry as much about the Russian sympathizing people who were in the town as they do about the soldiers. So it's a very tense situation. This is a part of the country where there is some sympathy for Russia.
Sure. And the language is Russian in all these areas, yeah?
Predominantly, yes. So it was it's a little bit notable that in this church it's Ukrainian. They've boarded up the windows, they said, to keep it from being vandalized or entered by the neighbors, unfortunately. But then this priest, after that service, you know, he's already wearing his fatigues under his vestments. He goes to the frontline units, and he takes the sacraments with him. And we were with him when he went to a unit that we were asked not to identify by location or name. And there, half a dozen people came for a mass held on a table next to a mobile kitchen under a tree. And it was a relatively calm 45 minutes. You could sort of hear nature and birds and the cows. No shelling for that moment, and it was quite a lovely scene to see.
Yeah. Steve Hendricks of the Washington Post, thanks for the time and for your reporting. Much appreciated.
A pleasure talking to you. Thank you.